Everyone who registered will receive a link to the recording in an email later this afternoon. So today for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome UVA alumna Ginger Moran. Ginger Moran, who graduated in 1977 from the college and in 81 from the graduate school, is a writer as well as a life, creativity, and book coach. She has used the philosophy and tools in this webinar to create her own story of success and can't wait to show you how. She has a PhD in literature and creative writing from the University of Houston on top of her BA and MA in English from UVA. She has taught at the University of Houston, Spring Hill College, Fisk University, and UVA, and her life took an exciting turn when she got her certifications as a Martha Beck Life Coach and as a KMCC Creativity Coach. Ginger has published fiction and memoir in the Virginia Quarterly Review, Feminist Studies, Salon.com, Oxford American, and other journals, and has published her first novel, The Algebra of Snow. Ginger currently writes, coaches, and teaches classes in memoir, fiction writing, and publishing at UVA and JMU. She lives in the Shenandoah Valley with her zoo and proudly claims two grown sons whenever she can get her hands on them. So here is Ginger with Tapping Into Your Creativity for Professional Success and Personal Satisfaction.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks so much. And thanks everybody for showing up today. I really appreciate your being here. And I'm so excited to have you all along. It's a beautiful day here over in the Shenandoah Valley. And I'm just thrilled to be talking to you about one of my favorite things. It's kind of a combination of my two favorite things, which is storytelling and creating a life that's just full of zip. So be sure to type in any questions that you have. The fabulous Liz Sprouse is going to be tracking that while I'm talking, and she will post any questions for me. When I pause to look at questions, she'll put them there. So if you have any questions at any point, I am going to stop and ask questions as I go. And you all can respond to that. But if anything comes up, I would be really glad to answer if I can. Okay, so I am Ginger Moran, as Liz said, and I'm a writer, book, and creativity coach. I am a former academic. I've retired, sort of. My children laugh at me at the idea that I retire from anything. But I formally retired from full-time academia and now teach part-time at UVA and JMU. And I work with clients privately and in small groups. And I actually have a number of UVA alums taking a novel and memoir class with me right now, so that's really fun. Today, I'm going to be talking about this kind of mashup of my creativity coaching and life coaching, and it really is based in a program. The talk I'm going to give today and the exercise that we're going to be doing is based in a program that I developed in partnership with another UVA alum, Bachelor's and Master's in English, the best major, Lauren Russo. So we actually have a program that we call Lean Inner, Become Your Own Creative Director. And so this is an official shout out to Lauren for her wonderful, wonderful partnership with me all these years. Okay, so Lauren and I worked together at the Women's Center for many years. And so sometimes this material may seem a little bit slanted toward women. But it applies at least as well to men. And I should say for some reason that I often have as many guy clients as women. Plus I have two fabulous sons. So This talk is for you if you are wondering where your mojo went. So you'll see our little subheading. Our title is Tapping Into Your Creativity for Personal Satisfaction and Professional Success. She's a part of this great series through the Alumni Association about improving your life, your career. And the question that I'm asking is, where is all your mojo gone? By that, I mean your sense of power, your sense of play, maybe your creativity. Maybe it's in that box of art supplies that is stuck away in the back closet. Maybe you haven't danced around your living room anytime really recently. Your sense of creativity, your sense of confidence, in fact, your sense of authenticity. And that word tends to get a little bit overused lately, but we're going to use it here anyway. Basically, what we mean by mojo is the joyful momentum that comes from creating a life that you truly love. And that's why we call our work becoming your own creative director, because we think our lives can be creative. So what happened to that mojo? It was possibly, very possibly, if you're anything like us, eaten by reactive, resentful inertia. And that can look like a million different ways. And believe me, between me and Lauren, we know all of these, exactly what they look and feel like. Here's some of the main ones. And if any of these sound the least bit familiar, just be sure to type in an amen, or you can also, you can just check your checkbox here to say yes. That would be really helpful just to give me some feedback as I'm going along, see if any of these sound familiar to you at all. So here are the things, some of the things that we experienced that you might be too. You have a lot of what you thought you want it, but you feel resentful and burned out because you're taking care of everything and everyone but yourself. Oh, I've already got an amen. I'm so glad. Thank you. Maybe you don't have much what you wanted and you're stuck in the place between pie in the sky fantasizing and procrastination because you think you'll never actually get where you want it to be. Or else, oh wow, okay, all right. I'm getting lots of yeses. It's so good. Maybe you postpone what you want to be creative, to actually enjoy your life, to do the things you need or have to do. Boy, does that sound familiar. I have to do my taxes. I was thinking, oh, I can't go to the movies this weekend because I got to do my taxes. Like, I got to practice what I preach and what are the darn movies. Okay, maybe you used to be ambitious and now that's turned into total reactivity. You don't have a plan. You're just putting out fires and responding to other people's requests. Run out of time for fun. Boy, does that ever happen. Maybe you've never been ambitious and you're interested in learning how to become more so, but whenever you read a book or an article about how to do it, it doesn't inspire you. It just makes you feel like you'll never have what it takes, so you should probably just give up and take a nap right now. Oh my gosh, okay, we're getting lots and lots of affirmation. Very, yes, okay, all right, well I'm sorry, but it does make me feel a little bit more normal. Sometimes you might be thinking if you've read a book that you've read recently by a famous person, you might feel like it would be so great to lean into your job. And it's so great to know what works for somebody else, but you don't have any idea how to put that to work for you. Okay, we get them. Okay, procrastinating, absolutely scared, absolutely. Okay, absolutely. And this is my very top least favorite point of getting stuck. I don't know what I want anymore. Has that ever happened? Anybody ever had just kind of forgot, lost track of? Somebody said to me the other day, you forgot who you are. Like, oh my gosh, I did. For just a moment, I forgot who I was. Okay, all right, we got more amens over here. Okay, oh yes, absolutely. Too much training, yeah. Enough of that already. Okay, so on top of all those scenarios, you might feel guilty and ashamed because who else is there to blame? And you've read all those articles to say that you should be doing something, and that just makes you tired. So we've got lots of yeses. We've got lots of people amening. So thank you so much. Appreciate that. That's amazing. So I just want to say that we have a different idea that we want to put out there. So chances are you've been told or you've come to the conclusion that the reason for all this inertia, this stuckness, this mojo desert that you find yourself in is that there's something wrong with you. That if you worked harder, if you were smarter, managed your time better, how many books have we read on time management, had better skills, in short, if you were better, then you wouldn't be where you are. We want to suggest a radical idea. We don't think any of those things. Book on time management, absolutely, yep, okay, all my fault. So this is so great. That's so great. Thank you so much for giving me that response. Cool. Okay. So we don't think it's any of those things. We don't think you're not good enough. We've read all the same magazines whose underlying message is just that. But the truth of the matter is you are already smart, already creative, already hardworking, and you probably have a robust spiritual life. But you haven't figured out how to put all that to work for you so that your day, from the moment you wake up with a sense of purpose to the time you go to bed with a sense of completion and real satisfaction, doesn't show how smart and creative you are. Look at everything you have done. You've done amazing things. It's not because you aren't good enough and you could do better. The reason you've lost your mojo is because the things you've done to cultivate it, working harder, getting more organized, reading another self-help book, buying some more clothes, getting a new house or a new job, or God forbid, a new husband or a new wife, trying to lose weight again, seem like good ideas, but actually are missing a crucial component, and that is inner direction. According to Martha Beck, who is the coach who writes in O Magazine and is our coaching mentor, many, many of us, if not all of us, most of us, live lives of quiet desperation, to quote another of our mentors, T.S. Eliot, divided between the self who behaves, who does what others expect, takes care of others, works hard to please others, and the other self, the wild child that we were born as, the young upstart with ideas of his or her own, crazy dreams, a sense of adventure, a willingness to take risks, someone who played harder and dreamed harder, and yes, even slept harder, not the one who always strived harder. Yeah, that word is even hard. Anybody remember him or her? We've got some people who love Martha Beck. She's really just so wonderful and so funny, as well as being really inspired. Oh, somebody gave up looking for a North Star. Well, it's out there. It's absolutely out there. Okay. Any wild children out there? Anybody remember being a wild child? Every once in a while, we've got people sign on for that. Oh, yeah. Let's see. I recognize somebody out there as a wild child because he's my brother, and we both did a lot of that. Okay, still in my heart, absolutely. Okay, it's never too late to be the wild child, 60s child, absolutely. I remember, it's starting to feel distant, but you know what? Never went anywhere. ended at college, you'd be surprised. You would be really surprised. So what has ended up happening with a lot of us is that our social self took over. And everybody has a social self, and thank goodness the whole thing would fall down, the whole of society would just fall down if we didn't have one. There has to be a part of us that cooperates, that plays well with others, that is responsible, behaves, follows the rules. Yes, no dream left, no hope. Yeah, it's absolutely crucial. Mojo, most of mojo, Stanley Bing said, is made up of hope. So that social self tends to take a lot of fun out of things. But there is also an authentic, or what Martha Beck calls the essential self, still there, went nowhere, absolutely alive and well and breathing, if very, very quietly, still dreaming, still scheming, still full of hope, remembering always what it was like to be full of promise, full of energy, who couldn't wait to get up and get going. Remember that summer energy, couldn't wait to get out there and play. I had a million things to do, and they were all pretty cool. It's like, which cool thing to do first? Now, a lot of that was because that essential self's plans were her or his own. The ability to please others was really important, but it wasn't the most important thing on the list. Believe me, we know all about it. So what Lauren has shared is that she got to the point where she had a really good education. She was in a low-paid job, wasn't a lot of appreciation. She had a ton of student loans, and she didn't feel brave enough to take the risk she wanted to because she was raised as a perfectionist, and how many UVA students don't have that as part of their makeup? She had a lot of student debt. She was working three jobs, all of them not tremendously well paid. She was draining herself all the time without filling up. She was kind of in a career stall. She didn't know which way to go, even though she has superb education, really smart, really hardworking, very creative. As for me, I will always be grateful for my years working in academia. I love the institution, and I believe in its ideals. But things hadn't played out quite the way I wanted them to. I'm a rater and a rating teacher, and I wasn't doing either of those things. I'd ended up divorced, raising my two sons on my own. And then while I was taking care of my boys, my terminally ill father, and my job, my ex got remarried and decided it was the right time to see me for custody of kids he'd had little to do with. Go figure. After a few more years like that, I had no mojo. I mean, it would be hard to have less mojo than I had none of. One of the last remaining parts of mojo I had was I had some really great connections to incredibly smart, energetic people. And one of them was Lauren, is Lauren, who's my partner in crime. And both of us ended up taking the Martha Beck coaching certification, getting our life coach certification. I went on to do creativity coaching. I started writing again, and then I ended up starting to teach writing again. So I'm actually now doing all of those things again. They've all come back to me. And as I think it was Ken was saying, I didn't have hope. I didn't have hope. I didn't have a sense of promise. I didn't have a set sense of excitement. So what was it that I had lost? I had stopped listening to my own inner voice. I had forgotten how to just stick to that no matter what, and to be actually unwilling and actually literally unable to be brought down by the unfavorable opinions of others. So Lauren and I both embraced the idea of going where the love is, which is another of our mentors, Dominique Browning's saying, and that had to start with love of ourselves. So there are many, many, many different ways of doing this. And what I'd like to do today is for, first of all, for you to realize that you are deeply and seriously not alone. And eventually, to take a look at some of the costs of focusing only on outer direction, on the social self. As I said, it is a wonderful thing. It's incredibly important. The whole society would fall down without it. But when it becomes dominant, when it becomes the master, then things start to tip in the wrong direction. So today we're actually going to do a little exercise where you start tapping into your inner direction. And this is a great combination of one of my favorite things, which is metaphor. Some people call me the queen of metaphor because I just pile them on in my book. But we're going to use that today as just a really beginning point of tapping into the authentic self. So we're going to do a little tiny exercise around that and give you a chance to begin that exploration. You can continue with that. But first I'm going to talk about the five top mojo stealers. And remember, we define that as mojo is your power, your creativity, your confidence, your authenticity, your playfulness. And you know what? I really need to add hope into that because it's so essential. Okay, so here are the things that we have found are the top five mojo stealers. Getting caught in trying to control everyone outside of yourself. Trying to make everyone outside of yourself better so that you can be okay. That looks like controlling other people's opinions of you, wanting them to like you, wanting their approval, wanting them to be okay when it comes to our kids. Can look like perfectionism, wanting to control the outcome, and so maybe never even starting. Another mojo stealer is a lack of good boundaries, being in other people's business. It looks like not prioritizing yourself, and it's amazing how much we do that. Doing everything for everybody else first, being really reactive, and having what Lauren calls contaminated time. That is time that is not clear and focused, which is absolutely exhausting. I think we're finding more and more that the misuse of technology can be really, really draining that way. A third mojo stealer, thriving on neglect, thinking that it looks really good to be super busy all the time and that it's somehow good for us to be taking care of all kinds of other things before our own enjoyment. Thinking it's better to need less. Confusing confidence with isolated independence and not understanding the interdependent nature of life, not needing things or thinking it's good not to need people. This is one of my favorites, the idealization-victimization continuum. This is where your expectations of everything and everyone, including yourself, are so high that you immediately pitch yourself into victimization and possibly its attendant resentful wish that someone would come save you. Your boss, your spouse, maybe your kids would be like so fantastic they would rescue you. This can become such a habit that you don't even know when it's operating. And the last one, disconnecting from your desires and your creativity. Remember play? Remember what you did on a summer day when you didn't have any place you had to be? Maybe you drifted and dreamed, or maybe you wrote a poem or baked a cake, or you hung out in a treehouse, or you played ball all day. If you remember that time and you haven't been back within recent memory, you might have disconnected from your innate, God-given drive to be creating, contributing part of this universe whose opulent creativity is all around us and of which we are a part. One of my favorite passages in the literature is from Alice Walker's The Color Purple, where she's talking about the absolutely extraordinary abundance of nature, the crazy creativity of nature, as shown by the color purple, which is so extravagant and unnecessary, and just so much of the bounty that's all around us. But we forget. We get too focused. We get too linear, and we forget to notice that crazy wildness that's all around us. So, first of all, You are so not alone if you have any of those mojo blockers. Any of those sound familiar? Let's see if we have, can we get some hand raising then? Oh, we get two grown up. Love it. Love it. Oh, yeah, lots of, yes, up, yes, hands up. Super fantastic. Sound all familiar. I would so love to hear when we get, ideals and victimization. Yep, perfectionism. Absolutely. Been there, lived there. Absolutely. Great. I would love to hear people's stories when we get into the Q&A. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about it, or you'll get my email address. I would love to hear it. Not prioritizing. That's right. Yeah, we forget. We forget. So that seems to be the new normal, focusing on others. Yep. So we avoid focusing on ourselves, obsessing, yep, control and image, absolutely, social self to the max, absolutely. Making money, yep, yep. Fearful, yep, too fearful to be gleeful and silly, fear of failure, absolutely. Okay, great, absolutely great. All right, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that because that totally affirms where I've been. Okay, so this is going to be a lost touch with creativity. Yep. Okay, well, I know all about that. I have a whole program on breaking through to your creativity because sometimes we just put it away and then forgot how to get back to it. It's almost like Hansel and Gretel. We have to follow that breadcrumb trail back to our creativity and back to our essential self who went nowhere. He or she is still there. It's just waiting for us. So I have like this totally, totally radical idea. This comes straight from Martha Beck. And it's just so outrageous. It seems completely insane. So what Martha Beck says that we have to do, and this is all that we have to do, is this just seems completely insane. We think she's out of our relevant mind. Rest and play. Who has ever heard of such a thing? But she's really serious about it. So we are listening to her because she says so many smart things, and we've tested out some of her theories, and they seem pretty sensible. This one seems completely crazy, but we're starting to figure out what she means. There is such a thing as finding your work really playful and just really enjoying that. And if it's work that comes out of your essential self or there's ways to shape your work so that it does, it can really feel like play because we human beings love to work when it's something meaningful to us. That's not something that is necessarily burdensome or onerous. So the way to get back to your mojo is not to actively cultivate it. Somebody was talking about too many trainings. It's like, oh, please, no more of that. Not to actively cultivate it, not to look to some outer source. And as hard as it may be, to become less dependent on others' approval or cooperation or understanding, starting with who is in charge of your desires. So your inner direction starts with connecting to your desires. Yes, okay, great. Writing is play when I'm in the zone. It's getting in the zone. Absolutely, it's following that breadcrumb trail back to that sense of creativity and play. So you create your mojo when you connect to your desires and act on them however slowly and however, it doesn't matter how small the way. The miraculous part of doing it is that the way you get there is by doing less and not more. I'm not talking about striving. I'm not talking about doing things harder, better, getting another book, because that's not the way to get your mojo back. If you're looking for a talk that piles on more for you to do and more ways for you to feel bad about what you're doing or not doing, this is not the talk for you. The best way to get connected to your desires is to play around with them. Somebody's talking about the Joy Diet, which is such a great book, another of Martha Beck's books. Just absolutely, it's like, do what? The first thing to do in the Joy Diet is to do nothing. It's such a counterintuitive self-help the best way to start connecting to your desires is to play around with them. So that's what we're going to do today. A little bit of that. So creative play is one of the best and easiest ways to tap into your inner direction to find out what you really want, and it can provide major mojo, even if it's in these little tiny steps. Yes. So Joanna asked a question about avoiding making it stressful. Yes. Yes, exactly. Okay. So you don't need any special tools for this except a piece of paper. Does everybody have a little piece of paper and a pencil, or can just type on their computer? You're going to get a worksheet that will let you do this some more if you want to, or share it with other people. So when Marianne sends you the link to this talk, she's going to send you a link to that, to this exercise, and you can do it some more. But just right now, we're going to do it live, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you have. Okay, so this is a Martha Beck tool. It's called a Living Space tool, and it's based on the idea that is a Jungian idea that the house is a symbol of our soul. And in this paradigm, every time you make a choice about which objects you want to bring into your space, where you put them, or whether you remove them, you're following psychological directives that shape every other aspect of your life, both your inner and outer sources of direction. So, for example, if you feel overwhelmed by tasks and people, your home might be overcrowded with objects. If you care more about your children than about yourself, you might take better care of their space than of your own. If you have secrets, you might have a bundle of stuff stuck away somewhere. In other words, everything in your house has some relationship to your soul and thus to your creativity. So here's what I want you to do first. Take just a little minute and pick an area of your home or your workspace that you find very unsatisfying, the most unsatisfying part. It can be your desk or a countertop in your kitchen, your bedroom closet. Pick whatever spot comes to mind as your yuckiest place. So taking some notes, take just a minute to do this, describe that space. Is it small, cramped, too big, cluttered, smell like onions? Go into some detail about the colors, the way that it looks, the way that it smells, the way that it feels. Just get lavish with that and talk about all the sensory details of it. So take just a minute to do that. Okay, you have a space in mind. Does anybody want to share? Okay, cluttered, but it smells good, it's cluttered, it's unused space. Okay, good. Anybody want to talk about their space could type in what space it is or what it feels like. Anybody else want to share? Basement, dark, dusty, ooh, bedroom closet, ooh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the basement full of the past. Yeah, absolutely. Desk, yep. Oh boy, does that sound familiar. I had to clean that for today because y'all were coming into my study. Home office, messy, unfinished. Huh, let's think. Room full of junk, can't get around. Stuff you never use, I don't care about. Very interesting. Master bedroom, cluttered, dark, mismatched, awkward. Meditation room is cluttered and messy. Whoa, very interesting. Can't step in. But also hopeful. Guest room closet. Office is hard to use. Absolutely too much junk. Can't find anything. Bedroom boring. Dumping ground. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Great. Good. Okay. So now I just want you to take just one more second and write down three things, three adjectives that are really already doing it, but just write down in a list the three things that you are frustrated by in that space. Lighting, clutter, placement, okay, confusing, bits, mess of paper. Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay, just write down the three things. Okay, so we already have that. Yeah, we have a number of that boring, master bath, don't use, don't keep clean, doesn't work. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yep, clutter, clutter, clutter. Gosh, it just seems to be everywhere, doesn't it? Wow, okay, absolutely. All right, this all sounds extremely familiar. Okay, so now just switch gears for just a minute and focus on what you ever liked or could like about that space. What works, what feels good, its colors. I'm seeing some of that already. It's nice space. There's hope for it. It had a good intention. Write down some of the things that you think of three adjectives to describe what you've ever liked or could like about this space. Write down three adjectives. When you have that, just go ahead and type some of those in. See if there's anything, if there's any hope out there in that space, if there's any hope for that space. Furniture, oh yeah. Oh, great view, lots of plants, oh yeah. Oh, sometimes you just can't, not there. Beautiful room, freeing, oh, that's wonderful. Space that's set aside, books in it, it's silent, good light. Spacious, good layout, shelving. Okay, have somebody to use the room. Okay, sunshine getaway could be a place of peace, neat, useful, sanctuary. Wonderful. Sturdy, ample length closet. So it has great promise. Great promise. Very important. Okay, so now I want you to just skim over your written description and instead of my space, put your name. Put your name in there. Are there any ways in which that negative space feels like a metaphor for your life, for your soul, for your essential self? Are there any ways that that space is standing as a metaphor? Oh, some beautiful, entertaining space. Okay, somebody feels half done and unfinished. There are no positives in some of these places. Maybe that just needs to be junked. Okay. Any ways in which, bedroom, trying to do too many things, too many responsibilities, too many roles. Interesting, very good. Not streamlined, too much stuff. A lot of loss. Outdated, interesting, very interesting. Lack of depth in the closet, disengagement with career. Have nothing inside. Wow, okay. Very interesting, okay. So are there any ways in those positive sides of it that could also be a metaphor for your soul, for your moment in life? Are there any ways that the desirable sides are also the case for you, for something internal? Potential, neglecting myself. Closet is disarray. Yeah, that closet can often tell us a lot about our stuff. I found out when I retired from academia, all of a sudden I had I think there had to be 30 empty hangers in the middle of my closet. It's like, oh, wow. It's like, well, I'm not quite sure where to go. I'm not quite sure what to wear. So I'm having to slowly put things back on those hangers. Can't or won't let go of the past. Absolutely. Okay. Oh, one room in my house and one facet of my life. That's really fascinating. It's very small. It's not a big part. It's not overwhelming. There's so much more. Lack of organization, lack of direction. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally no. Need to get some stuff finished. Yep. Okay, so for your next trick, I'd like you to think of just one tiny, and I'm talking tiny, 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 tiny. Do not let perfectionism take over here. Tiny step you could take to put some of those desires into action. One tiny thing you could do to change the state so it's more like one or all of the things that it could be. Don't make it a big thing. Desire to be with friends too confused and cluttered to make time for them. So don't decide all of a sudden you're going to have this huge, big social life. You're going to have a great big dinner. Think about somebody you could email, you could give a quick call to. Need to take time, get connected. Okay, great, good, yeah. Very, very familiar themes. Create files, okay, great. Cut things out that suck my time. Again, think of just one tiny, tiny, tiny way. It's amazing. This is what my whole creativity coach training is about, is to break things down to very, very, very small steps. You're going to get way more momentum out of very small steps. Sweep up the cobwebs. Love it. Absolutely. Just take a little bit, take a bridge, just a corner of those, one corner. Just get started with one tiny thing. Could put some fresh flowers somewhere. Could get rid of one thing. Don't make it too big. Add some whimsy. Oh, I love that. Put it in your closet. Oh, good. Just go through one bag of papers. Open the windows. Oh, I love that. It's so easy. It's so easy. Nothing to it. Yes, that's exactly right. This is a question of releasing things, not of adding. And if you possibly can, put my appointments all on one day of the week to consolidate my time. That is such a great idea, doing that kind of time bucket, creating boundaries around our tasks and what we do with our time. I love that. So if at all possible, do that right after we get off the call today, or do it as soon as you get home. Again, make it so small that it really isn't hard to do. This exercise works on three different levels. First, the physical action that improves the quality of your life by tapping into your inner direction, no matter how minutely. So it's not that hard. It's right there. That's the thing that we keep forgetting. It hasn't gone anywhere. Right there. And it also shows you the effectiveness of taking very small steps to create what you desire. But you also can't do it without changing your habitual patterns, which may be a habit of perfectionism and procrastination, which are the two biggest enemies of our creativity. And you'd be surprised what kind of ripple effect a tiny, tiny action can take. You can, if you just start to pay attention, you'll find that making very small changes in your living space, take down one photograph and put up a different one, can have really far-reaching effects. Sending you down a slightly different path, but it can end up accumulating into a big change. So, the ELB's exponential little bits. I love that. What a great phrase. Exponential little bits. Love that. Beautiful. Okay, so that was my whole goal with today's talk, was to start getting you from a place where it might not feel hopeful to get what you want to feeling like it is possible and it's in your grasp. Not that it's a burden or responsibility, it's a letting go. So I hope you can take that further, and I'm gonna be here answering questions, so we're not done. So the next steps have to do with assessing on a larger scale, knowing yourself, getting more in touch with your essential self, take a look at where you are in terms of listening to your inner direction, accepting yourself. See, I forgot to change my slides. I got so caught up. All right, here we go. Accepting yourself, protecting yourself. That is, if you have people or things in your life that are draining you, that are taking you away from this essential self, you might just begin to carve that back a little bit, a little step at a time. One thing that I have discovered is that when I say, oh, I can handle this, I almost always can't. That's almost always the BS I'm handing myself. And then you can begin to write your own powerful, joyful story. So think about it, it's little tiny stuff, taking out cobwebs. If there's someplace else you could put out the work, little tiny bit of cobweb removal in the area of work or time management, just a little tiny bit. A little bit of self-care, maybe where you took a little bit of time to take a walk, take a nap. Again, it's the letting go, it's the releasing. It is not adding. So then you want to write your own powerful and joyful story and focus on the future and how to stay anchored in your inner direction as you move forward, framing your life as a continual act of creation. So some of the people that I have found most useful in this, and somebody already mentioned this. Okay, so Cindy asked a great question, which is, what is my inner direction? So your inner direction is the one that took you into that room and gave you some clarity about things that are cluttering. That you already know it. It's already there. And the ways in which that represents your life. So sorry I didn't make that link. That was an excellent question. Okay, I'm going to go back. Ken wanted me to go back to the previous slide. Which one would you like, Ken? Okay, so this is your inner direction, the one that tells you what it is that you need to do and where you want to go. Good? Okay, good. All right. And we'll eventually create the whole fabric of a story that can lead you into a different place. Again, it's clearing things out, using things like play, metaphor, using these tools of simplicity and ease and playfulness to get at where that essential self is and what that essential self wants you to be doing, what will please the essential self rather than pleasing the social self, because we are all very familiar with pleasing the social self. So it's using play, metaphor, story to tap into that. In Lawrence, my program, we actually do a lot with fairy tales, which is really fun. Because fairy tales are very evocative of our inner self. So if anybody wants to go further with this, this absolutely is we've gotten you off to a start here on tapping into that inner self through creativity, through metaphor, through dreams. We both do this kind of work with people one-on-one. And we'd be glad to do it. We have this program Lean Inner that we do with one-on-one. We also will be offering a class, a group class, and Sheila and I will be teaching it together later in the year. She also does life and career coaching, and I do book and creativity coaching. I'm actually teaching a class through continuing ed at UVA this spring, a class in publishing, which is slightly different. So if anybody else is out there writing a book or wants to. The registration for that is going to close today. Okay, so examples of tapping, creativity exercises. So this metaphor tool is a great way of doing that. If anybody has ever done any kind of dream work, that is another great way of doing it, is to see the parts of your dream as parts of yourself and to ask them for information about where you need to go in your life and what kind of message they're bringing to you. Seeing a problem in your life, giving it a metaphoric representation take whatever the problem is and see it as a ball or a plank or whatever the metaphor is that comes to you, and to begin to play with that metaphor. There are lots of ways of thinking about your ideal day and then working backwards from that to this present moment and finding the little steps that will take you to the ideal day. So Martha Beck has a lot of these exercises in finding Steered by Starlight and Finding Your Own North Star. They're great books. They're really fun, really, really helpful. And again, you know, Lauren and I both do this as part of our coaching. So there are lots of really fun tools, and there's a coherent way of making a map for moving forward, and that's in Finding Your Own North Star. And again, we work with people on how to apply that. And how to write a different story is my specialty. So I am open to any and all questions at this point. Let's see. So Tiny Steps Lead to Big Changes. Martha Beck's Finding Your Own North Star is a great reference for that. Robert Marr's One Small Step Can Change Your Life, The Kaizen Way, is another fantastic book about changing what is right before you, little by little. It's a great book. I really appreciate that. Journaling, absolutely. Yes. Martha Beck, Robert Moore. I have tons of other references. I'd be glad to give them to you. Vision boards, absolutely. That's a great way of imagining your where you want to go. Just letting yourself pick pictures out of a magazine and putting them together in a vision board. Mapping. Martha Beck talks about imagining your wildly improbable goal. What are the things that if you just had no limits, you would do? And it's amazing how often those can become much less improbable. I would never have thought that I'd be here today talking to you about this, and writing and teaching again and running my own business. Like, who's ever heard of such a crazy thing? But here I am doing it. The Artist Way, yeah, Julie Cameron, absolutely fabulous. Yep. Yes, the Union Theory. So I will, there are lots of references to that. I'd be glad to send that to you. Okay, great. So just recently, there was a big article just last week in the New York Times about writing your way to happiness, which is my specialty. And there is a psychologist at UVA, Dr. Timothy Wilson, who's just written a book about this, changing the stories we live by, and the tremendous power of writing itself, which is amazing. They are finding that writing, just journaling, it doesn't have to be shaped. It doesn't have to be artistic. You don't have to be James Joyce for it to work, but that it actually raises the immune system. It lowers blood pressure, and it can make enormous changes in people's lives. I actually do a talk about this, about the power of journaling and the physical response of the body to doing that. And The Artist Way is a great book for helping people figure out exactly how to put that to work. So this is a quote from the New York Times article. These writing interventions can really nudge people from self-defeating ways of thinking into a more optimistic cycle that reinforces itself. It can make a tremendous difference. Again, they seem like small things, but that you can write your way to happiness, which is such a cool idea. So those are our contacts, those are our emails and our website. And we would be absolutely thrilled to hear from you all. Just talk to us about your story. The War of Art, absolutely spectacular book. Great book for fighting procrastination. I have lots and lots of tools for that, too, because there's nothing like that for creative people. No, we never procrastinate. We never put it off. Ha, 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 ha. Like, on a daily basis, a minute-by-minute basis. So I have lots of... Lisa said this is stressing me out. What's stressful, Lisa? Like being your essential self. Sometimes it can be really scary. Oh, I procrastinate when I get around to it. Me too. All right, I am so open for questions. So ask me questions. It's almost 1, but I can stay for a little while after that if anybody would like to. That was so funny. I procrastinate when I get around to it. Yeah.
Hi, I'm going to pop in for just a moment since we're coming up on 1 o'clock.
Sure.
Ginger has agreed to stay online for a few more minutes. So if you can, we hope that you'll stay with us for a little while longer. Before we get back to your questions, I just wanted to give a big thank you to Ginger for her very helpful webinar. I know I was making some notes as well back here. I have a particular room in mind.
Okay.
We do appreciate your sharing your expertise with us. And I also wanted to let everyone know that our next Friday Forum webinar will be coming up on February 20th when we welcome Kathy Anderson. Kathy is going to be talking about using professional education for lifelong advantage. So we're going to get back to Ginger now for a few more questions, but if anyone has to leave, I just wanted to thank you again for joining us today. We really appreciate your spending time with us, and as always, we have been recording today's webinar, so you should receive an email later today with the recording, and we also hope that you'll remember to complete the Friday Forum survey. So back to Ginger now. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz. Okay, so let's see, we had a question here. I'm going to try to, how to introduce more creativity into my boring and stressful job while I work on making a bigger change. So I love the way that you put that, because that is exactly the technique, is to just do it in very, very, very small pieces. And again, if you can use this living space tool to think about what you don't like about it, obviously, and be very clear about that. I think sometimes it really, really helps to be, and this is again what they talk about in the Writing Your Way to Happiness article, is that getting very clear about it, and it isn't about telling the same story over and over again. That's what Martha Beck calls story fondling. Is to really look at, to analyze what there is about that that you can do anything about, any part of it that's in your control. And that's not about changing all of it. Awful is awful. You can't un-awful awful. But you can really look at your handshake with awful. It's what part of that is it that you have any control over. And begin to let go of that handshake. Let go of your integration with that. And it's a challenge. That's really a challenge. But again, it's try to get very clear about what it is. Even using the living space tool on it, get very clear about what it is that's going on. Then to really feel your way into a different way of doing it, into a freer, happier, more joyful, energized way of being there, as well as working your way into a different place, because as I said, awful is awful. So, and again, just in small steps, that is the whole secret, is to do it in very small steps. That's the way to duck out of procrastination and perfectionism. So small steps for improving, small steps for moving into a different direction. The handshakes, really, there's an interface. There's the world out there, and there's our inner world, and then there's our handshake. And there are three different things. Sometimes you can't make the world out there really, really different. You can be working on improving your inner world, and you can be working on that handshake. Good. More about my coaching. Okay, so like I do all kinds of different kinds of coaching. Oh, so the question is, tell me more about your coaching. I coach people on actually writing books, people who are actually writing books. I take them through that process, or people who want to write books. I go through that process with them. I also have a program for helping people who have lost track of their creativity, really getting back in touch with their creativity, looking at writing a different story, then actually writing that story and putting it into practice. So that's the Lean In or program where I really help people, and Lauren does this too, is to help people recraft that story and then begin to live that story differently. And I also work with people in a more book-oriented approach to that, where if they're people who are dealing with life issues, but they want eventually to write a book, then we go more in that direction. And I offer classes. Laura and I will be teaching the Lean In class again later in the year, so be sure to let us know if you are interested in doing that. It's a 6-week class that we do by teleseminar, so you don't have to be where we are. We aren't where we are. We aren't in the same place. Lauren's actually in Texas, and I'm in Virginia. I'm in Charlottesville. I'm in the Valley. I'm in Stanton, but I'm often in Charlottesville. Yes, okay. People in the job market. Yes, very hard to, not everybody can be an entrepreneur. Not everybody's cut out for it. I think there absolutely is a way for everybody to make their lives more joyful. Absolutely. And I think the important part is it doesn't necessarily have to do with changing the outer circumstances. It can often have to do with changing the inner landscape. And if you try to change the outer circumstances without changing the inner landscape, it probably won't work. We refer to that as the geographical sphere in some of the work that I do. You have to change that inner landscape first in order for the outer to make any sense. And then the outer will just be absolutely inevitable. So again, it's not necessarily about changing outer circumstances. It really does have to do with changing that inner attachment to outer approval that can make all the difference. How to raise and advise our children to be true of themselves. And consider creative pursuits along with practical ones. Well, I think, you know, as usual, we're the models for them. Yeah, I should ask my children. They're both pretty creative, particularly after they graduate from college. I think that's a huge challenge, and I think that it's so important to learn how to balance that creative with the practical. And again, I think the way to do that is for us to live our own vision. I agree, it's very challenging. There's a great book by another UVA professor, Meg Jay, about that. She calls it the defining decade, the decade of our kids' 20s, and my kids are both in their 20s, so I'm very familiar with that challenge, how to be practical and still be creative, energetic, alive, not to lose that part of themselves and become totally absorbed in the social, as important as that is, the social and the practical. I'm not an impractical person at all. I'm a creative, practical person. Oh, cool. Liz says there's a Friday forum with Meg Jay. So that's a spectacular book. I love that book. It's very, very good and very helpful, very realistic. Again, I would call myself a practical visionary. I'm all about how do you make this actually happen in your life. Any other questions? I'd love to answer. I'm still here.
Looks like a couple of people might be typing questions right now, so maybe give it another moment and
okay.
See.
Okay, good. Oh, good. Okay. Thanks, Robin. So glad. So glad that was helpful for you. She said it was a great discussion. So, okay, any other questions? The seminar that I'm teaching in continuing ed has to do with publishing, and it's for people who are even thinking about writing a book. And it's covered by Education Benefits if anybody's working at UVA. So, and today I think it's the last day to be able to register for that. I'm teaching a novel and memoir class, but we're almost finished with that. I'll be teaching another one in July. My next one comes up in July. And I'm, you know, otherwise do one-on-one. Okay. Excellent. Joanna enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'd love to hear from you, Joanna. I'd love to hear your story. Thanks, Kim. Love to hear from you. How do you build a network of oh boy, is that a good question. That network of like-minded people, that is so key. What a great question. I should have talked more about that. You need that fellowship. This is Tolkien points out, you absolutely cannot do this alone. You definitely need to be looking, and I think, there are lots of people out there. There are people working in the Martha Beck world. There are people working in the Danielle Laporte world. She has a great group called the Desire Map. And I've actually taught the Desire Map groups too. There are a number of people in the community who are really working in this this arena. And the great thing about technology, as many drawbacks as there can be to it, is that you can be connected with the group. You don't all have to be in the same place, although being in the same place is really helpful. But I would say, many of my people I'm connected to virtually at this point, I said, Lauren, who's my partner in crime on this, is in Texas and I'm in Virginia. We just do everything by Skype and phone. Any more questions?
I think there may still be some typing going on.
Okay. All right. I'm good with that. All right. Again, I would love to hear from people. Take a look at my website. I'm actually going to be at the Virginia Festival of the Book. I'll have a table on Saturday. One of my dear friends and clients, Erica Rask, and I will be sharing a table there. So if anybody's at the Festival of the Book, I'd love to see you. Come by the Omni on Saturday. I'll be there with my book, The Algebra of Snow, my novel. I'm happy to talk to people about this, about writing, about my zoo, which was mercifully quiet today, and what happened to them. Is there a way to jumpstart procrastination avoidance? So, yes, the secret is to, I would say there are two secrets. One is to break it down into such a tiny step, you can't not do it. And if you're still procrastinating, break it down one more time, cut that in half, do just that little tiny bit. The other thing to do is to get a buddy. There's such power in using the social self for good. Get a buddy and agree to do something together, if it's on the phone or in Skype, or have some kind of agreement that you're going to connect with each other around having achieved this. Use the social self to get done things that the essential self wants done. Let the social self be the servant of the essential self. But again, tiny, tiny steps are the way to get there. Tiny steps. Martha Beck calls them turtle steps. The steps that a turtle could take. It sounds totally ridiculous, but it does work. Slow and steady, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Ken is agreeing. Thank you so much, Ken. Really appreciate that. It doesn't seem possible, but again, I think that if you create some kind of accountability, you create a fellowship, you say what you're going to do, and you follow through with it, it really does work magic. We get so, it's such a habit to idealize even our own performance, what we can do, and then just don't do it. It's the smallest step is really what gets us there. Anybody out there writing? Anybody feeling any creative urges? Do people paint a picture? I just met with a group. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Joanna. says generosity spirit. I really have to say so much of it comes from tapping into my essential self and taking some, big steps, big scary steps, to live that way. Yeah. And doing things like as a group of friends got together and just had a bunch of paints. I'm so afraid of painting. It's like, I'm a terrible, I can't draw anything. But I just thought, I'm getting in here. There were some really great artists in the room who really knew what they were doing. I just sat down and thought, okay, well, I love color. I love shape. So I'm just going to do colors and shapes. I should show you. It's ridiculous looking. But, I had so much fun. I did polka dots and stripes and circles, dots. It wasn't good by anybody's standards, except it was a lot of fun. So, find other people who want to break into it too and just have a little time together, even if it's just on the phone, where you get on the phone and you doodle or you knit, whatever it is.
Okay, I think that may be all of the questions, Ginger. But thank you so much again for being here today for the wonderful presentation. And thank you all for joining us today. We at Alumni Career Services here in Alumni Hall really appreciate your spending the afternoon with us. So please plan to join us again on Friday, February 20th for our next Friday forum. We hope to see you then. And thank you, Ginger, again. Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. My pleasure.